and welcome to the podcast The Lotus Eaters for the 18th of April 2022. I'm joined by Thomas.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about how God is Rwandan, certainly isn't English anymore, and also Zelensky's nuclear threat and the absolute state of LBC, because I don't know what happened to them. Well, we don't know what happened to them. They purged themselves, turned into a crap show. Anyway, but some things to mention first, which is just some rules about the video comments. So the editor is back after his holiday, so please keep video comments to 30 seconds, because I'm going to try and enforce the rules again to make sure that we actually are consistent on that. But otherwise, I'm sure everything's fine. Otherwise, we shall get into God being Rwandan, because I am looking forward to this.
Oh, yes.
So, God is Rwandan. He used to be English, hasn't been for a while, and is now definitely Rwandan, at least in my view. And we shall prove this by looking at Rwanda and how they are dealing with our wonderful offer of giving them refugees. Because remember, diversity is strength.
Oh, yes.
So we are giving them strength. Mm. And I'm not even joking. So this is a video here on Priti Patel's Twitter page, she put up, of her being like, yes, UK-Rwandan partnership, la la la. And the promotional video includes like her counterpart, presumably, in Rwanda. And it's like she's given her a script and be like, hey, our leftists are retards. Just say that you're an inclusive, welcoming country and you love migrants, and it'll work. And so we'll have a look at that, in which Rwanda says, refugees welcome. Let's play.
We're one of the first countries in the world to establish a partnership of this nature.
We will ensure that migrants who are sent to Rwanda receive the protection that they need. They will have legal pathways to live and work and develop their talents here with us.
This is the right thing to do for many, many reasons. We've seen thousands of people come to our country illegally, but through dangerous means. And that's what we want to stop.
So the new investments being made in this partnership will enable us to do even more of what we're doing currently in welcoming migrants to Rwanda and ensuring that they're able to develop themselves.
You are welcome. Like, the people don't care where they are coming from, as long as you are friendly to them, as long as you're integrated, that's it. I felt that for me. The first thing I did was just to start school, and they were kind enough to let me start in December as soon as they arrived.
Well, to me, Rwanda is everything. My family, having 4 children, having a number of companies.
Rwanda is a safe and welcoming country. We're an inclusive country. We do not discriminate against anybody. This is enshrined in our constitution. We also have significant experience in welcoming refugees and migrants to our communities. And this partnership allows us to do even more of that and do it even better.
I mean, it's hard not to laugh because it's so perfectly
over the top.
Yeah, but it's so perfectly crafted. Like, whoever's done that deserves a pay raise, frankly, because that's genius.
So how do we make a troll video?
Yeah, inclusive country, we welcome refugees of all kinds. Refugees are welcome here in Rwanda. I love it. It's all genuine. I love how they give us I'll give you an example of the refugees we have. A software engineer and a CEO. It's just like, okay, I'm sure they will be getting more software engineers and doctors and lawyers. And
it'll benefit hugely from the cultural enrichment that is on their way.
I love the idea that it's almost like they've been getting the engineers and doctors that the propaganda keeps telling us that we're getting. And we're like, no. Like, we haven't got any of them. And they're like, I don't know why. We've got plenty. Yep, sure. That's more software engineers on the way to Rwanda there. Because we don't need them. We must send them to Rwanda, because God bless Rwanda. Rwanda forever. Anyway, we'll go to the next article here from the Daily Mail, which is responding to this with some quotes from the church, because the Church of England is very mad.
Right.
What are they mad about? Sending refugees to Rwanda.
To a country that is, what, 90% Christian?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So the church opposes welcoming refugees to Rwanda.
Right.
Justin Welby told his Easter sermon congregation that the UK has a duty as a Christian country. Number one, have you been to Tower Hamlets? Ever, sir? No.
Yeah, okay. And it's involved in that's maybe keeping Britain Christian?
No.
No, funny that.
The Christian country aspect is to invite as many non-Christians as possible.
Oh, I see.
And then ... prophet. I don't know what his big plan is here, except maybe just for open borders, what else. He also goes on to say, Mr. Welby said the serious ethical questions over sending asylum seekers abroad cannot stand the judgment of God.
Right.
Which, I love the idea that God hates Rwandans. Like,
does fast-tracking an asylum seeker application somehow pass the judgment of God, then, even if it comes to the detriment of, I don't know, a hospital in Liverpool, potentially?
No, that's not part of the judgment of God.
Oh, I see.
It's not involved. He has been joined in his sentiments by the Archbishop of York, Stephen Cottrell, who called it depressing and distressing to send refugees to the beautiful country that is Rwanda and give them all the, well, support they need. I mean, again, we saw the video. You can become a software engineer or a CEO. I also love how he says that there's nothing depressing or distressing about the shameless deceit of tens of thousands of, frankly, piss takers that we have seen. Just taking our money and then being given papers that say, yeah, you were taking the piss, please leave. And then they just don't. They just disappear into the black market. That's not shameless.
No.
That's not depressing in the slightest. No. Okay. Instead, sending these people to Rwanda to be processed there, that's unforgivable. Well, Cabinet Minister Jacob Rees-Mogg, a committed Catholic, said the government is not abandoning migrants, but taking on a very difficult responsibility with the intention of doing good, which he says is important to Christianity. Church of England responded by saying, no, being dishonest and shouting about it is what Christianity is all about, presumably, because that's all they've done in response to this. Instead of dealing with the reality, they've decided, no, it's bad. Why? It's unchristian. Why?
Well, surely to act in a Christian manner is to act out of conscience. And if you have a conscience as to, I don't know, the effects that could be inflicted onto the accommodating society, then why would that be an unchristian thing to do from the government?
Well, everyone loses at the current circumstance, because the refugees themselves, they say the legitimate ones, they get irked out by people taking the mickey. The people taking the mickey, there's no reason for them to be here. They end up in the black market in slave labor if they just pirate about. And it's like, okay, great, so it's bad for them. Bad for us, the taxpayers and the native people who have to pay for all this, and it's just theft. Okay, so who's it good for? Well, the people smugglers.
Yeah.
Will you please think of our Christian duty to the people smugglers of Europe?
Yes. So the worst thing is quite literally to do nothing, because it comes to the detriment of everybody involved, except for the smugglers.
Yeah. But anyway, I don't know why. Well, I suppose we should take the Christian sentiments of the Church of England a little more in, well, perspective of what they think is Christian, because if we go to the next one, this is the same church. I've listed this before, but when the ministers were caught engaging in adultery, this is one Church of England bishop who decided to go down and say that the adultery was just a bit of a fling, not really important. The bad part was him not wearing a mask.
Oh, was it?
While he committed adultery. One of the Ten Commandments. No, okay, they're not a Christian thing.
Not that
commandments.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move forward. If we go to the next one, we can see that Pretty Patel has responded to this, as you can see, by saying, you come up with a better plan then. I just love this. She challenged the Archbishop's offer to offer his own solution to the migrant problem. The male right. Amazing. So Pretty Patel and her Rwandan opposite have decided to write a piece together, and they give a quote. The UK and Rwanda stand together in their efforts towards promoting a new, fairer, and more effective global asylum system. Allowing this suffering to continue is no longer an option for any humanitarian nation. The suffering of people dying in the channel, needlessly, for stupid reasons. The suffering of the people smugglers, coercing people. The suffering of the people, well, in England, who have to pay for all this.
Yes.
Or have to live next to, well, wonderful circumstances. We go to the next link. We can also see the fact that apparently the church is far more concerned, as you alluded to, with spending their time supporting bombings. Should be supporting bombing the British instead. That's the Church of England's position. That's the Christian thing to do. Bomb the English.
Yes.
Fantastic. The Church of England is facing questions over its role in converting hundreds of asylum seekers, including the Liverpool suicide bomber, to Christianity in an attempt to help them avoid deportation.
Great.
This is a real thing. And as they say, hundreds. I mean, this is all over the country. So what is it? You have refugees who turn up and very much on the Allahu Akbar train. But then they realize that their asylum application is going to be denied because they're taking the mickey. So if you convert to Christianity, they can't send you back because you'll be killed for converting.
Yes. Which then means it's against the European Court of Human Rights for you to actually deport them back to that country.
So the Church of England has been helping them subvert the system to try and, well, damage this country even more.
Yeah.
I mean, on a financial level or on a terrorist level, in the case of the Liverpool suicide bomber. The Iraqi man killed in the abortive suicide bomb attack outside Liverpool Women's Hospital is understood to have been helped by the church in his attempts to avoid being kicked out of Britain after his claim for asylum was first rejected in 2014. Thousands of asylum seekers have been welcomed into the Anglican faith. They're very sincere about the Anglican faith. They really care about Jesus. In recent years, with the clergy even given written guidance on how to navigate the Home Office systems.
What are you doing?
Seriously. This is the church that's very concerned with its unchristian to send people to Rwanda to be processed. Meanwhile, we're going to help some terrorists out.
But they are aware of Islam's own position on non-believers, aren't they? As in it basically permits, I don't know, this sort of thing as a means of, you know.
What's it called in Islam? I'm trying to remember the word. It's going to come to me in a bit. What were you saying, John? Takiya, there we are, yeah. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welles, who else, has called for Britain to be generous to migrants fleeing conflict. And remember, Jesus was a refugee. It's pathetic. Like, it's just embarrassing when people talk like this.
Yeah.
But especially from the Archbishop, who was just like, yes, trying to save Britain, that's terrible, that's unchristian. But trying to bomb it, that's right, I'm a Christian. Like, it's ridiculous. If we go to the next one, we have his counterpart I mentioned earlier, the Archbishop of York, who we actually spoke about a while back, me and Carl, in this episode, where the Church of England denounced themselves as racist. So again, don't care what they have to say.
Nope.
But the Archbishop of York decided to come out and say that Jesus was black. We was...
Based on what?
Jesus, and there was nothing in there. I went through it at the time, it was just like, I don't know, he's just mad. Like, genuinely a mad person. So, of course, the leadership, the Church of England, is too white, he says as well. But that just exposes what the Church of England is, which it's corrupted by social justice and clearly irreligious.
Yeah.
Like, they have no moorings in religion.
It's been remoulded to the point that it's in contempt of the religion it claims to serve.
Yeah. As someone who's a bit mad about this,
Who's that?
Go to Calvin Robinson here on GB News.
Oh, good old Calvin.
Who is pretty upset because he's like, well, what the hell is wrong with you? As he says, this is why people are leaving the Church of England in droves. They don't want to hear wokeness. Kind of want to hear the Christian stuff, don't they? I mean, I'm not even a Christian. Not even, you know, my club. But I could obviously see that this is a joke, if nothing else. If we go to the next one, we can have what Calvin's been up to, of course, which is, as a dear Christian, he has decided to, well, on Easter, teach people about Easter and Christian values. If we go to the next one, he's teaching people about Christianity, the origins of the cross as a Christian symbol for a Christian chap.
Mm.
Yeah, so the Church of England have kicked him out. So,
oh, brilliant.
If we go to the next one, I love this. Calvin Robinson hits out a woke decision from the church to cancel his route to priesthood. Apparently, Calvin's been training in the church to become a priest because it's near and dear to him.
Well, they've kicked him off the course.
He's not allowed a parish of his own because of his views. His views being that, well, Christianity is pretty important. Anti-Christian views, maybe not very Christian. That's Calvin's position, and the church were like, we're not having that. If we go to the next one, we can see there should be another link in there, John, which is Carl's interview. But it's just, I love the fact that presumably he also doesn't want to see more children being blown up in Manchester.
Yeah.
And therefore that's his crime, or at least that's why he's not allowed his own parish.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, what a horrible man. Doesn't want to bomb more kids, unlike the real Christians. I'm mad. But anyway, if you want to go and check out, there's also Calvin Robinson's interview with Carl here on how to hold the establishment to account, which of course is very relevant now. Mm. But if we go to the next one, we can see that he has given a big old interview to The Express here about the situation. GB News presenter claims that bishops blocking his ordination because of his conservative views. Mr. Robinson?
What? His interest in conserving Christianity.
Yes. So, the Christian man wants to conserve Christianity and therefore he's got to be kicked out of the church.
That's his crime.
Because he doesn't want to bomb Manchester.
What a heretic?
Yeah. Heresy to social justice. I mean, if you wanted a more clear example of how, pathetic an institution the Church of England seems to be these days, that would be it. Mr. Robinson, a former teacher and well-known right of centre political commentator, has been training for ordination at St. Stephen's College in Oxford and was supposed to begin a currency in Holborn later this year. But senior clergy in London, of course it's London, including the Bishop of London, Sarah Mullany, have taken exception to his criticism of woke culture and other conservative comments on social media and blocked the original plan. Mr. Robinson has told the Sunday Express that he has consulted a barrister about possibly taking the Church of England to court over the issue, arguing that he and others are facing prejudice for having orthodox conservative opinions.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I know that is a joke, this in the sense of, like, the UK is very irreligious, and the joke has always been in England, for foreigners who don't know. Oh, you're an atheist. Oh, you should join the Church of England. Like, there you could be a modernist, which means you don't believe in God. But it's so real. Like, demonstrably, like, we have a guy who genuinely wants to spread the word of Christ. Kick him out.
Yeah, and he's presumably acting out of conscience for the, I suppose, to the assault done to the Christian religion by the Anglican Church, and they've dealt with this by what? Preventing
him from being able to preach because,
well,
he'd be preaching the wrong things.
Obviously.
What are the wrong things? Christian things. Not social justice things.
Yeah, quite.
Amazing. So he said, I felt the media work was part of my calling and future ministry, so those two were not separable. However, a Zoom meeting on February 25th, the Bishop of Fulham, Jonathan Baker, who was his sponsor, told him that, quote, he needs to make a choice, and warned that it would be too difficult to do both because of complaints which were being made about him. What were the complaints? A few hours later, the Bishop of Fulham emailed the Bishop of London to say that Mr. Robinson's currency in Holborn had been cancelled. A number of complaints from unnamed individuals who, according to the documents seen by the Sunday Express, were sometimes on first-name terms with the Bishop of London's secretary, were raised against Mr. Robinson. So, we have a bunch of SJWs in the church, or out of the church, who even knows, just emailing the bishop's secretary being like, you can't have Robinson, why? He'll say things. What things? Christian things.
Are any of them actually Christian?
Probably not. Judge Wenger seems not. So, one point of contention was Mr. Robinson objecting on Twitter to another ordained Gerald Robinson Brown's attack on Captain Tom Moore. Gerald Robinson Brown, who had been allowed to go ahead with a planned currency in Aldgate, said of the Second World War veteran, who has become an inspiration during the pandemic lockdown, the cult of Captain Tom is the cult of white British nationalism.
Really?
White British nationalism. He was
literally interviewed by Owen Jones a while ago, wasn't he? And received in a quite friendly fashion, I must say.
Captain Tom, part of the far right. But just the part of, well, race nationalism here. White British nationalism. So, well, Calvin responded by pointing out that this was obvious BS. Mm. So Mr. Robinson retweeted asking if he was racist for now using the phrase from Farmer Ted's, I hear a racist now, father, for people who don't know the reference. Because what the hell's wrong with you? Like, this guy's raising money for the NHS. Put it aside for a moment. But therefore, he's part of white nationalism. The hell are you talking about? The Bishop of Edmonton wrote to the Bishop of London describing Mr. Robinson's tweet as concerning.
Concerning.
Saying that you're obsessed with race. Stop it. That's the concerning part. Another was over his criticism of the church report, where it concluded it was institutionally racist. As I showed earlier, we went over that. It was pathetic. Like, the evidence was embarrassingly poor. It was clearly a case of just, like, whipping yourself because you want to be bad. In an email in December to the Bishop of London highlighting Mr. Robinson's views on immigration, institutional racism, and other areas, he said, these are clear examples of why, in my opinion, his ordination should be looked at very closely indeed. The issue came to a head in December when Mr. Robinson, who is black, met the Bishop of London, who is white, in December, where she insisted the church was institutionally racist in a wide-ranging discussion about his tweets.
Why?
Certainly is, isn't it?
Hmm.
You've got a black man here trying to get his parish, and you've blocked him. Why? Why have you done that? White privileged lady? Bishop lady? Who's holding over the future of this innocent black man who just has, well, actually pretty tame opinions on, well, immigration. I also love the fact that he's like, it's not institutionally racist. And she's like, well, not on my watch. Mm. it's gonna be institutionally racist when she's done with it. But anyway, that's the circumstance there. But the reason I went through all that is, number one, Rwanda forever. Honestly, yeah. Rwanda really is my new best friend. I find the whole scheme hilarious. I mean, I did see Jared Batten made a very good point, which is the obvious solution would be to send them all back to France. Mm. But we tried that as in, like, paying the French, and they wouldn't do anything.
Didn't work, did it?
So, well, okay, cut off relations with the French, and we'll make friends with the Rwandans. And it's not about the money, it's about sending a message, which is if you try and break in illegally to the UK, well, you're going to go to Rwanda and have a lovely time, aren't you? But also just the fact that God certainly has not been English for a while. So presumably he is Rwandan. Hmm. Other than that, sorry, we'll end that there.
Okay, so let's talk about Volodymyr Zelensky. I'm going to be as transparent as I can possibly be on this matter. I'm completely and utterly fed up with him up to this point. And this is because in a public statement he released on Saturday, he basically made threats to NATO on Russia's behalf by saying that NATO countries must be prepared for a Russian nuclear attack should it happen. To be sure, he's not exactly saying it's coming, hide under your desks, but he is just saying to everyone that they must be prepared should it happen, which is, well, surely, like any country, anyone who knows that nukes exist would have allowed this to cross their mind at some point. You'd think that would go without saying. So I'm going to use this segment to explain first the events building up to this response, and second, why I believe this to be completely and utterly irresponsible and a reckless thing to say at this point. In addition to a clue as to why we should stop deifying him as much. But first, I'd like to shield a couple of things. The first is this. This is a premium video that features both John and Bo discussing the war in Ukraine with reference to past examples of urban warfare and sieges. They analyzed the extent to which Russia is apparently waging a limited war on how examples from history might help us understand what is happening and why. In short, history shows Russia to be pretty ineffective when it comes to urban warfare and thus offers some insights in why the special operation might not be going as Putin might have wanted. And whilst you're on the subject of Russian and European imperialism, for my second shill, I would like to show this, my premium article in defence of imperialism. Despite what the thumbnail suggests, this is not a defence of the British Empire, though I would still defend it. It's a pushback against moral relativism and a defence of the international effort to establish a universal system of ethics. So it's a defence of internationalism to a degree, but not in the in its current form. But anyway, back to Ukraine. I'm going to offer a brief summary of the build-up to Zelensky's recent statements. We received confirmation on Thursday or Friday that the Russian missile cruiser Moskva had sunk in the Black Sea. The ship took significant damage after being hit by two Ukrainian anti-ship missiles on the 13th of April, I believe, before being sunk in a storm, as John reports here. After the strike, the ship was reported to have been in a critical condition as well as on fire. It was being towed to Sevastopol, with the crew having already been allegedly evacuated. This was naturally a big blow for Russia, literally. Obviously, retaliation was likely, and well, they retaliated by carrying out renewed attacks on Kiev and Kharkiv. Let's play the video to see the damage in Kharkiv.
На момент прибуття було встановлено, що горіли будівля. Адміністративна виробнича площа пожежі склала близько 1500 квадратних метрів. Вибуховою хвилою частково пошкоджено поруч розташовані будівлі, серед яких і житлові багатоповерхівки. Ліквідували пожежу. За попередніми даними, одна людина загинула та 18 чоловік травмовано. На момент прибуття було встановлено, що горіли будівля. Адміністративна виробнича площа пожежі склала близько 1500 квадратних метрів. Вибуховою хвилою частково пошкоджено поруч розташовані будівлі, серед яких і житлові багатоповерхівки. Ліквідували пожежу. За попередніми даними, одна людина загинула та 18 чоловік травмовано.
Damage there. Thankfully, there was only, as far as we know, only one person has been killed. 18 have been injured. Scattered explosions were also reported to have been heard in Kiev, though we don't have much report on that at the moment. But if we go on to the next. We also heard this morning that five powerful missile strikes have hit the western city of Lviv, the city not that far from the Polish border. The city has been for the most part spared throughout this war compared to the other cities under assault, but Russia now appears to have intensified their attack following their loss in the Black Sea. Russia is, as we know, reallocating its forces to prepare for a major offensive in the Donbass region, meaning that if any further attacks occur, they're likely to be missile strikes like this. But of course, tension continues to go on outside of the war zone itself as well, as with neighbouring countries. So if we move on to the next, Finland and Sweden, as things stand, are currently official neutral buffer zones, if you like, between Russia and NATO. But now both are entertaining the idea of joining because of Russian aggression, and both have different ideas of how to proceed, however, as the article illustrates. Finland has indicated it prefer a solution that would see the two Nordic unaligned states jump together into NATO, so Finland would very much like Sweden to join within weeks with them to make a joint geopolitical statement to Russia. But Sweden has decided to take a slightly softer approach to examine a wide range of security-related options, including deepening the Nordic defence cooperation and urging the European Union to develop enhanced defence policies, offer etc. I mean, but basically, Finland are very much all for joining completely, almost surrendering their neutrality, and Sweden are very much.
Which is very funny because, of course, you know, Finlandization is named after Finland, so.
But as you can probably imagine, this announcement, particularly from Finland, has upset Russia considerably, to the extent that it has threatened a nuclear escalation, if we get the next one up here. So the deputy chairman of Russia's Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, previous president in between, I think, 2008-2012, has responded by saying that should Finland and Sweden join the alliance, there can be no more talk of any nuclear-free status for the Baltic. Those are his words. For those unaware, Russia has ships placed in Kaliningrad, previously known as Königsberg, and in the Gulf of Finland as well. Lithuania's defense minister actually weighed in to say I'm terrible at pronouncing names, but Arvydas Anasauskas said he found Medvedev's kind of announcement strange because, well, it's been common knowledge that they've had nuclear warheads, stored in Kaliningrad for some time anyway, so they don't even actually know what this means, or we're basically saying that this is a little bit of a false attempt to escalate the situation in a sense. But
it's probably just rhetoric.
It probably is just rhetoric. That's
like, we already have the nukes there. We know.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So that's what that amounts to. But if we move on to the next, Russia has continued to warn the United States to stop arming Ukraine because, of course, they are providing a significant amount of aid, which has been very, very effective. $800 million worth, in fact. And Russia has said if it doesn't stop, there will be unpredictable consequences, which is kind of an interesting phrase to use, isn't it? Because it means literally nothing. Unpredictable consequences. What's up? Russia don't know. The US don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite as, I don't know, spine shivering as when Putin said right at the beginning there'll be consequences, more consequences than you've experienced in your history. So this almost feels like a scale down, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it could also just be alluding to nukes again, but you know.
It could be, yeah, but it's not stating it explicitly. Like, it's the unsaid things in these matters that you have to look out for. And I think it's almost as if they're using every single, or they're almost running out of ways they can actually frame the language to, well, I don't know. Anyway, this was on the same day that Volodymyr Zelensky released the statement that this segment is all about, that the West must prepare for a Russian nuclear attack, should it happen. So let's just play the video.
І не треба чекати від Росії, коли вона буде використовувати ядерну зброю. Світу не треба, світу треба готуватись до цього. Готуватись по-різному, не тільки антидоти, тощо там, да, бомбосховище, але з ними треба говорити, підписувати бумагу, затиснути їх економіку так, щоб у них не було навіть думки про це. Ось що я маю на увазі. А треба очікувати від них. Вони можуть використовувати будь-яку зброю, я впевнений в цьому. Будь-яку зброю. І вірити не можна.
See, for me, this is exactly the same thing that he tried the kind of same trick that he played when he was trying to get the no-fly zone imposed in Kiev. He's basically saying that, look, this is going to happen. Don't wait for it. You have to be ahead of the curve. He's not, of course, saying this is imminent, hide under your desks right now, but he is nonetheless almost guilt-tripping his allies to a point.
Yeah, but this is expected and kind of fair. I mean, in the sense
to a degree.
Him and his country are fighting for their lives, so of course they're going around at every moment trying to gin up support.
Well, I understand that perfectly well, but at the same time, it does feel as if he's putting words in Russia's mouth.
Yeah,
by framing
maybe.
It in this way. And that's what annoys me.
There is some nuance to the nuclear stuff. I just happened to be reading this morning a thing that I found, which is about Vladimir Putin's position on nuclear warfare. Mm. So everyone else has this agreement, or at least everyone did, which is, okay, we'll use the nukes when our existence is threatened, because otherwise this seems a bit, you know, retarded. So
wouldn't that be the case of anyone who has them, though?
Yeah, literally. So this used to be the stance of the Russian Federation as well. The nuclear doctrine was, okay, if the existence of the Federation is threatened, then we use nukes. But Vladimir Putin, I can't remember what year, but some years ago, changed it so that if the critical, national interests of the Federation were threatened by a large-scale attack, then we would also use nukes. But of course, the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
And everyone else has been a bit like, I don't know.
Yeah, but isn't it actually ingrained in their military policy to actually escalate with the views of de-escalators and to almost escalate?
Yeah, but that's one of the funny matters. part of the note was to escalate to de-escalate in the sense of, we'll use one nuke so then we don't have nuclear war. Okay.
Yeah, but that's not going to work against NATO, is it?
Well, to use against Ukraine in this example. Oh,
okay.
Yes.
No, I get what you mean.
But yeah. It's a separate thing.
What annoys me about Zelensky's move here is he seems to be going along with Russia's policy here, or at least escalating it when he should be trying to do the opposite. That's what annoys me.
Well, you know, he is in a war.
He isn't. Yes, but surely you would want to. Why is escalation always the best option?
Because he's fighting for the existence of Ukraine.
Yes, why not try to at least save what's left of it? I mean, we know for a fact that they are currently mobilizing to try to to launch a full-scale assault on the Donbass region. Like, you would think, surely, there's still a lot to be lost here for Ukraine. Like, they fought incredibly well here. But they've just launched 5 large missile strikes against Lviv. They could do so again. Yes. They could go for Kiev again. You would think at least he's thinking about that. Like, Russia has basically just made a statement saying, look, if you're going to continue, well, sinking our warships and subjecting us to huge losses, like, we will retaliate. And that's not, like, yes, he's fighting for his country, but there are people still in his country as well.
Like, there's... We don't have all the information he does for why he's thinking.
No, of course we don't.
But I imagine it's on the lines of, well, you know, I'll escalate to try and get as much support as possible, and that's all he's thinking about.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to think about this logically. I mean, I'll move on a little bit. But if you ask me, he's just given every reason why we shouldn't push Russia into a corner to the point where they have nothing to lose from launching nukes. The very worst position that Ukraine and thus NATO could find itself in is where Russia were pushed into such a corner. It very much feels as if this is the end game. That's what concerns me.
Well, that's one of the worries, is that if the Russians can't take what they want, then they may end up using nukes to try and get
it. To avoid getting to that stage, de-escalation logically is the only option.
Yeah, but by that logic, de-escalation is also surrender.
Zelensky, what are you doing? Well, yes, I know that they are literally at war. Someone has to.
Well, this is the argument. Like, is it worth fighting for?
Yeah, okay. Well, to disambiguate this, I'm going to try to think about this logically. If Russia was serious about using nuclear weapons at this point, this is my view, one would think they would have used chemical weapons in the way that was being feared some weeks ago, in a very obvious fashion as a means of transmitting the message to Ukraine and to NATO that, look, we are prepared to go to these inhumane measures to get what we want here. But we've had mixed reports about that, haven't we? As John covered. But you would think they would do something to tell the West, look, we're willing to act on our word on what your intelligence is telling you. Then again, it's quite plausible that US intelligence may have been wrong and Russia may not have had any such intention in the first place. Again, we just don't know. But if we move on to the next, here is a public statement by the UK Parliament about the threat of Russia using chemical weapons. The hysteria about the threat that the mainstream media were propagating has since dissolved somewhat. John last week reported that some were used in an attack on Azov in Mariupol, but there seems to be no compelling evidence to confirm that, at least at this stage. We know that Russia have been using the hypersonic missiles against Ukraine that they would use if they were to use their nuclear warheads, but this is as far as they have gone insofar as nuclear threats are concerned. But in fact, according to this, which is this article here, claims about Russia's use of chemical weapons are unverified, but the Ukrainian general has gone from saying that it's definitely going to happen, they're definitely going to use them, to saying that it's unexpected that they would not use them. So the head of the intelligence put simply made the accusation that Russia used them and couldn't verify his claim, and then changed his tone to say that he still does expect them to use them. So it does appear as if some disinformation may have been spouted here. And given that Joe Biden has both said, albeit accidentally, that President Putin can't remain in power, and that the US would respond in kind should, that was his words, in kind, should chemical weapons be applied, it can't be denied that there is an incentive for Ukraine, particularly Azov, given what we know they may have in mind for Ukraine, to carry out a false flag. Again, this is just speculation. Zelensky, however, has since opted to double down in escalating the situation. That is, since he actually released that statement about the nuclear threat or the nuclear possibility. And he's done this by, if we move on to the next, using his Happy Easter message to accuse Vladimir Putin of execution-style murders in torture chambers and abducting officials in southern Ukraine. But the latter, I would say, is more plausible than the former, but I'll read out this, at least how the story's been captured. In a 9-minute video address shared on Facebook tonight, Zelensky said southern Ukraine has been ravaged by Russian torture squads. He said torture chambers are built there. They abduct representatives of local governments and anyone deemed visible to local communities. Zelensky said humanitarian aid has been stolen, creating famine. In occupied parts of the Kherson and Laboratsiya regions, he said the Russians are creating separatist states and introducing Russian currency, the ruble. Mr. Zelensky said the democratic world must react to what the occupiers are doing in the south of Ukraine, in the Kherson and the Zaporizhia regions. Torture chambers are built there. They abduct representatives of local authorities and anyone deemed visible to local communities. They blackmail teachers, they steal money provided for, paying pensions, humanitarian aid is blocked and stolen, and they create starvation. There is nothing but deliberate terror. This is nothing but deliberate terror. Mortars, artillery against ordinary residential neighborhoods, against ordinary civilians, he said. So that was his statement. We wouldn't have time to play the whole video because it is, of course, 9 minutes long. But to put this in context, it's one could argue that at this point there are no ordinary civilians in Ukraine. Everyone is in theory a conscript. It's still extremely cruel, of course.
Anyone with a gun.
Okay, yeah. But in short, it doesn't change the fact that it's still an extremely cruel thing, and it's still, I believe, it would be cited or regarded as a war crime by international law. But explicitly targeting citizens in such a manner.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But to put this in context, that there have been reports of Russia shooting some surrendered soldiers and even elected politicians for weeks now. This isn't actually like a new story. I heard something come out about this. What was it? A few weeks ago. And the claim that Russia has established torture chambers is obviously a strong one from Zelensky. But so far, he hasn't been particularly detailed in his description of it. So I'm willing to, I think we should suspend judgment on that for now. I'm not saying that we should disbelieve Zelensky in saying this, but we should just, I think, remind ourselves how he's been, or at least from how I see it, I know that many people have a very, very different view on this. He's playing the escalative game almost two steps from where it is at the moment. When we were at the stage, for example, that Kiev, that Ukraine was actually holding its own quite well in Kiev, and he was saying, look, we need a no-fly zone now, it didn't really match the situation on the ground, because most of the attacks coming, or the missile strikes, weren't actually coming from the Air Force, were they? They were actually being launched by mortar artilleries. So a no-fly zone wouldn't actually have had the effect that was being claimed. Do you remember that force field meme that was actually being circulated on Twitter about how some people envisage how this no-fly zone would work? That's what that was referring to, just like this shield that would ultimately not be as effective as one would assume. But yeah, I'm not saying we should disbelieve him here, but I think we should accept that he may be exaggerating this somewhat. Again, I'm trying to suspend judgment and wait until what actually comes out. But
I mean, I don't know, but I could believe it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put it past the Russians at all.
No, I wouldn't. Well, I wouldn't put anything past them, as we've observed. I don't. If there's anything we can know about the way Russia or the information coming out of the Kremlin, it is not only not to take it at face value, but not to believe it. As in their main, you could say, the arbiter of the way their PR system works, what is it, Vladislav Surkov, has actually almost established a position of power for the Kremlin by disfiguring reality so as to ensure that the Kremlin can continue maintains its position of power over information by just disfiguring the real concept, just keeping people in a constant state of confusion, basically, hence the KGB tactics. But yeah, rejecting Zelensky's claims to impose a no-fly zone showed that it was a correct decision for us not to do that. And I therefore think we should try to distance ourselves from Zelensky a little bit on this. His rhetoric was relatively consistently being several escalative steps ahead of what was necessary. And I think we should be a little bit more open to the idea that, I don't know, it feels like this is a dangerous escalative game that he's playing.
So we should end up there.
Yeah, for now. Yeah.
We'll move on to LBC. So, I don't know. I just watched a bunch of like LBC clips recently. I thought we'd go through them just for a laugh.
Okay.
Because frankly, it's a joke. So, start off. So, I thought we'd talk about the absolute state of LBC. For foreigners who don't know, there's a radio station in the UK called Leading Britain's Conversation. And it used to be kind of good. At least they used to have some people on it.
Yeah, I used to listen to it.
Yeah, and then it purged itself of all the, well, interesting people. So we'll start off with Katie Hopkins here, probably the most controversial host they had that's then got kicked. As you can see here, this is some time ago, but she was kicked. What did she kick for? The Final Solution tweet. Yikes. Okay, what did she have to say? So, quote, 22 dead, numbers rising, Schofield, don't you even dare, don't be part of the problem, we need a Final Solution Manchester. End quote.
Oh, this is about, right, okay.
Yeah, so this was about the bombing where a innocent asylum seeker decided to, well, blow up a pop concert full of kids. The English there doesn't really make sense. Apparently she then edited the tweet or tried, well, put below that she had typed it wrong and then deleted the whole thing.
Right.
So presumably it was a poor you know, formulation there, but whatever. She ended up getting purged from LBC. That's the story there. Mm. We go to the next one. Nigel Farage himself got a show on LBC in which he was interesting and would talk about things that no one else would, and then got purged.
Surprise, surprise.
For what?
Didn't Owen Jones also step down because Nigel Farage started working for them?
He wanted nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
I also love, there's a response in here. The tweet has since been deleted, interesting enough. Hmm. James O'Brien, leftist host, decided to tweet after Farage got kicked, "We got our station back." Certainly did.
That says it all, yeah.
Got your leftist echo chamber back to
it's
yourself.
The only time he's ever told the truth.
Yeah. I love it. He published a book called How to Be Right, in which he just circle jerks. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
We go to the next one. Of course, we then have one of the other remaining hosts of any interest. Majid Nawaz, amazing chap.
Yeah.
Very interesting guy. And he was saying the things that no one else would. And of course, that made sure he had to go. Couldn't stay. Why? Again.
Too much integrity.
Interesting. And integrity, as you say. I mean, this is the thing. Like, I used to enjoy LBC exactly for, you know, people like Majid Nawaz, where you could listen to it and you'd always have something pretty cool to say and an argument which sometimes you agree, sometimes you wouldn't. Mm. But the point was that it was kind of like Christopher Hitchens in that regard. You never really knew where it was going to land.
No.
And quite often, you know,
there
would
be
fun. But
it was always a perspective that no one else had thought of or dared to address.
Yeah. So ever since they kicked him for being a Fruit Loop, for saying that maybe total lockdown tyranny is not a good idea. It's mad, apparently. Apparently that makes him anti-liberal, the Liberal Democrat. It's been kind of pointless since, obviously, because if you just have people that aren't interesting.
Well, exactly the same as each other, yeah.
Yeah. So we go to the next one. We can see there's a new host here who I'd not seen before, but she's been popping up
more. She looks familiar.
Yeah, and I've been watching a lot of her crap, and I thought we'd go through some of it for a laugh, if nothing else, because the best part about this Rwanda thing is definitely the responses. And so we're shipping all our refugees to Rwanda for good and moral reasons, because the Rwandans are saying refugees welcome, as we have seen. And she decided to go with, as you see here, "We're not a great country that everyone wants to come to. We're a silly little island that is struggling in almost every industry. We're cutting off our nose to spite our stupid racist faces."
So we're nothing without open borders.
Yeah, I also love how you've got, what have we replaced Majid Nawaz with? Okay, we'll replace it with some leftist brainlet. Yeah, like I see John there. Okay, galaxy brain. Why are tens of thousands of illegal immigrants crossing vast distances over half a dozen safe European countries to come here every single year? Big question, isn't it? Anyway, we'll play the full clip so we can see how stupid racist our faces are, according to her, for daring to say that maybe we should have, well, a border policy and not just open borders. Let's play.
I can tell you what I expect the government to do. I expect the government to see it more as a resourcing crisis than one of finance. If we're going to talk about people coming into this country, we know study after study has shown that they contribute a net benefit to the economy. The problem is, as Peter Tatchell said earlier, that people who initially come to this country aren't allowed to work, which therefore puts a strain on the social benefit system. But if we allowed them to work and contribute to the economy straight away, we're struggling for nurses, for other hospital workers, for cleaners, for lorry drivers, in all kinds of industries. We are struggling. And I think we need to acknowledge that we're not a great country that everybody wants to come to. We're a silly little island that is struggling in almost every industry. And this is a classic example of where we're cutting off our nose to spite our stupid racist faces.
So why are they coming here then?
I love the bigotry of these kinds of people, though. Like, they know nothing of the subject of immigration.
It's that same line over and over again. Migrants bring profits.
More GDP.
If you don't like profit, you must be racist and irrational.
But that explains the bigotry, at least exposes the bigotry, as you can see here, of the kind of people who know nothing about immigration policy and know nothing about any kind of asylum policy. And they've just got it in their minds. Like, what's the right principle? Open borders. That's the good thing. So I'm for good things. So I'm for open borders. And then we'll find arguments to try and justify that kind of crap, such as my GDP will go up. I love how she identifies, hosting tens of thousands of asylum seekers, who are going to get denied anyway, and that costs a lot of money on the benefit system, but we should let them work, and you could always see, almost, she could have got to the point of, but that would have a strain on people trying to find jobs or keep wages down of British people. She doesn't get to that part. She doesn't realize that in the slightest.
She conveniently stops there.
Yeah, I also love that she's like, stupid racist faces in this silly little country. Leave then.
Yeah.
Nothing's stopping you, Miss Devon. You can go anywhere. In fact, we shall take a look.
I'm sure she would have done had she not been given a job at LBC.
Yeah, I also love the great point. I want to let the entire third world into Britain because it's racist. I want to oppress the third world directly instead of overseas. Mm. Interesting. Right, well, we'll go to this migration map because, of course, for someone who, I don't know, who's been living under a rock. I don't know if you're going to click on Britain there, John, the blue dot at the top there, just so we can get an actual map of, well, where people are coming from in the UK and where they're coming to. And as you can see, the entire world
is coming here.
And Britons are leaving primarily for Australia, Canada, and South Africa, apparently. Don't know about that one. Mm. But yeah, some to the United States, net, of course, some to Chile, because mi general Augusto Pinochet, and some to, what is that, Oman? Mm. I don't know, presumably on holiday. Anyway, so that's the migration map. So there we are, factually, wrong on the face of it. The entire world does want to come here. Here's the map. Yep. Miss Devon, in case you're
Take
watching. Hi. Anyway, I also love the idea of just like, they're a net benefit to the economy. My GDP. What about my GDP? It's like, there are more things than my GDP, lady.
Yes.
And Carl's spoken about this a lot, but this is the perfect example. I didn't get time to show Leo, so if you're watching Leo, here you go. Here's the headline. From Sudan to the Park Inn, the tragic story of a migrant's killing. Oh no, the tragic migrant who was killed by the racist country. Do you think that's the story?
Of course not.
Well... That's the kind of thing they want to give you with that kind of headline, isn't it?
Yes.
Scroll down, John. Badrin Abdullah Adam left his room at the Park Inn Hotel in Glasgow, walked down to the reception and stabbed six people. The awful tale of a migrant's killing. He was shot to death. For stabbing people to death.
So what about the other six people?
No, they're not part of the tragic story. His tragic story of a beautiful young life.
Right.
A man who has gone through hardship to get
to
the Park Inn.
So that's just what him expressing himself?
I mean, I'm sorry. I laugh because it's so absurdist in the way that we tell these stories in which we're like, yes, but they're my GDP. They're a net benefit economically, I swear. This is debated endlessly by economists. We're not even going to get into that. But just, what about the terrorism?
Mm.
What about the tragic story of this particular man who went to Glasgow for a stabbing spree? I mean, it's just endless. There are other things in life. Humans are not goods. You cannot create and destroy them at will. That's why we don't
the thing
have...
is, but the modernity for these people is just to show that must go on no matter who gets stabbed.
But it follows on from this liberal logic, which you always hear of, oh, we'll have free movement of goods and free movement of blah, blah, blah. And then it goes to free movement of people. And it's like, what? No. No, people are not goods. Like, you cannot just move these things around ad nauseum and expect no results. You get results. Anyway, but all that matters is my GDP. But what is she doing here? Well, she's making an argument for open borders. That's fundamentally what she's arguing. Like, that it's blatantly obvious. She only says any of this because she wants the whole world to move here as soon as possible. Mm.
And let me guess, his reason for going on this killing spree in the first place has something to do with, I don't know, post-colonialism?
Yeah, I don't know. He's upset about the British Empire.
Right.
But I also just, Miss Devon here wants Devon to be as British as Heathrow.
Right.
Like, she wants to literally remove, well, Devon culture from Devon by the end of this because she wants the whole world to move here. If we go to the next one, we can see that, well, we've spoken about this previously, me and Carl on this hangout here. This is a premium hangout on lotusears.com. How Britain has changed. We just look at the video evidence of the change. It's very recent. So go and enjoy that. Go and check that out. But if we get to the next one, we can also see the fact that a lot of people like Gary Lineker here have been moaning about,
God.
Oh, look, the right wingers saying we hate this country.
You do.
You do.
You're literally calling for its demise.
It's a stupid, silly, racist country. That right? That's you guys. How's that refugee in your attic, Gary? Did you ever get it in the end? I don't actually know. People who don't know, Gary was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get a refugee for my house to show that I'm not racist. And I don't think he ever did.
No.
Presumably
convenient.
He put it up in one of his mansions anyway. But we'll move forward. If we go to the next one, we can see Konstantin Kissin having none of this, being an immigrant himself from Russia. One of the reasons it is so fashionable to talk down our country and civilization is that this kind of ignorance and mediocrity is rewarded with jobs, clicks, and light. I'm going to say that about myself. Fantastic. Mm. Britain is one of the best places to be an immigrant slash minority in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Demonstrably true. I mean, have you ever looked at a racism map?
No.
They're pretty fun. Because it's a map of where you ask the local inhabitants, would you mind if, say, your daughter married a person of a different race? Mm. And, oh good lord, you quickly learn how lucky we are to live in the West.
Yeah.
Because you just have, like, the UK... the Northern European countries, North America, Australia and New Zealand, and then the rest of the world, really not as liberal.
A bit more what's the word, bigoted?
The French, especially. We're just like, a different race, sacré bleu. No. So there's, go and look at my map that, sometimes. Yeah, the UK is one of the best places to be an immigrant slash minority in the world.
It's amazing the things that go unsaid on this issue.
Yeah, it's just, but it's also just like, our country is the race. Look at a racist map. Go and find one. Anyway, but there's also the point there made by Constantine that these things are rewarded. I mean, rewarded by who, though, of course? Which is, well, the kind of people who run LBC and purge all the rightists.
The inner circle of the cathedral, yeah.
Yeah. If we go to the next one, we could see Her Royal Highness, Dr. Schola, on LBC.
Oh, fantastic.
Well. I say Her Royal Highness, not for no reason. But she decided to come out, and this was during when the Ukrainian war started up, and there were discussions of, we must save the Ukrainians. If they've got family in the UK, mm-hmm. we'll be able to bring them over, because they're actually fleeing a war. Mm. And also, they're going to be, you know, women and children. This was problematic for Her Royal Highness because, of course, well, they were white. Mm. They don't deserve it. You should be taking more Syrian men.
And they have what Syria, white privilege for being a victim in a war.
Yeah. Anyway, let's play this clip in which she says calling Ukraine civilized is racism.
Right.
Let's not forget the way the West has been reporting the war in Ukraine and how they have compared the Ukrainians as middle class, Ukraine as a civilized society. The utter racism used to pit Ukrainians in their, I admit they're suffering, against others. So those from Afghanistan, those from Palestine, those from Syria, who are experiencing so much more and have been experiencing so much more for many years, and pitting them against each other as though, well, you know, I think those people deserve to because they're not from a civilized society. You don't expect to see this in a country in Europe. I mean, if one had to go down the line of saying to Europeans, especially the British, to look at their own history and to please take their finger out of their, you know, where the sun doesn't shine, and they should stop saying the nonsense they're saying, I think it would take a long time, because the one thing we don't do well in this country is take responsibility for our actions.
Love that. Wonderful argument. Wow. What was that? So you can't call Ukraine civilized. That's racism.
Right.
Okay. Compared to what? Palestine, Syria, and Afghanistan. And then had to have a jab at Britain at the end there, calling us all ignorant. Right. First, Mo. All right. Or Miss Highness, or whatever the hell the royal pronoun is for you there. Being gay is punishable by death in Syria, Palestine, and Afghanistan. Let's start there. Mm-hmm. Okay. In Ukraine, there's no gay marriage. So basically the same. This before we even get to like the apostasy or any other of the Islamic prescriptions on how one should run a country. I think we can make the judgments that Ukraine is more civilized.
I do actually remember her outrage on this. I mean, she was upset about the Homes for Ukraine policy that had been announced because, of course, what, £300 a month was being offered for those who took in a Ukrainian refugee. So what she basically proceeds to claim is that this should be extended to anyone in the world who feels that they're owed a historical debt by Britain. I mean, are there any problems? Are there any problems that could possibly come out of this?
A lot of Yankees being like, I deserve a holiday. I was oppressed by the British Empire.
Subsidising for anyone to come to Britain.
Yeah, Her Royal Highness doesn't really have much in the way of thought. I also love that, they've been through so much more, have they? Well, just factually, again, you're wrong. Like, if we ask the sea people where they're from, I remember because I looked at the Home Office data for this, over 50% say they're from Iran. You know the great Iranian civil war that's been waging? Yes. No. Yeah, just BS.
One of the only places where there isn't like an internal conflict.
Yeah, in so the Middle East, at least. Obvious bollocks. These people are coming from France to start. Mm. It just ends there, frankly, this discussion. This is why this is such a sticking point for me, because it's just so laughable. But if we go to the next one, there is a reason I call her Royal Highness. It's because she is a Royal Highness.
Well, literally.
Well, she has royal blood in her, that's for sure. If you can scroll down here, we can see her original tweet. For some reason, she keeps trying to hide this. On International Men's Day, I celebrate my late father, Prince Abe. Good luck. First male feminist in my life. Don't insult him. He's your father. If we scroll back up, because this is public knowledge, your Royal Highness. And someone on Wikipedia keeps trying to add this to her Wikipedia. And someone else keeps deleting it. Just going to say. So if you click on the first one there, and then go to the second image, but don't go to the third one, because there's some IP address in there. I don't know how YouTube feels about that. It's all publicly available there, data though. But there's, as you can see, the line about the fact that she is related to royalty keeps getting deleted. And I mean keeps getting deleted.
We mean like, she's deleting it.
About 6 or 7 times now, someone keeps adding it. she's like, no! I presume it's her, because I track the IP, and, well, the house prices aren't small.
No.
From that IP, so presumably it's someone of royal lineage. Anyway, so that's Her Royal Highness on this, on LBC, who gets invited on because, again, just, I don't know, left the circle jerk at this point. If we go to the next one, we can see Dunce Lammy, David Lammy, who decided to chime in as well because, of course, he's got a job at LBC now because Nigel Farage, too controversial.
Right.
Literal moron. That's our guy.
Majid Nawaz, too based.
Yeah, but David Lammy, I don't know, so cucked it's allowed. Anyway, he decided to go with Britain is crossing its own channel from lightness to darkness, from sanctuary to hostility, from hope to hate. So Rwanda is darkness, hostility, and hate.
Yikes. Almost sounds racist.
Yikes, David. I know you're a Ghanaian nationalist at times, but...
it's a bit of a stretch for you, mate.
Yeah, so again, he's just making the argument for open borders because he only wants more people to come. I mean, that is the end logic of what he's arguing here.
Of course.
It's just like, we have tens of thousands of people and we can't get rid of them. Yeah, we need more, says David Lang. Right. Yeah, you can't be let anywhere near the levers of government. But if we go to the next one, we can see a call he had. I love this call. Little lady, Elizabeth. Spirit animal, decided to call up David and tell him the reality that literally everyone in a town and city in this country is faced, which is you have homeless people on the streets, and you walk past a hotel with hundreds of sea people in, who are clearly not from Syria, put it that way. And, well, they're all getting paid to be there. We're paying for their accommodation. They get a stipend to go to Wetherspoons, apparently. Every day after we finish work. And, well, she calls up and tells him how it is. And he doesn't take this well. Let's play.
Good job. Send them to Rwanda. We've got a hotel where we live. There's 300 young men in there. They've been in there for a year. And they reckon they're going to be in there for another 3 years. There's no women, no children. Just young men on their mobiles. They set the smoke alarms off once a week so they can get outside and smoke. Everybody's bending backwards for them. They give them free coffee, free trainers, free clothes. You know, what the hell's going on? You keep saying immigrants. They're not immigrants. They're illegal immigrants.
Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute, Elizabeth. I don't know about the young men in that hotel, but I do know.
Well, I do, because I live next door to it. I can't book a hotel for 3 years.
Elizabeth, it's shocking that the government have been so hopeless at processing claims in the Home Office that they're sat there in the, next to you in a hotel for 3 years. That's the government screwing up. That's not the young men.
Well, he's got a point insofar as it's a terrible policy by the government.
But... Well, no, the terrible policy by the government is letting them in to begin with.
Yes.
Like, his argument here is, well, only if the application process was faster, they wouldn't be able to turn over millions of migrants per year, and that wouldn't be a problem because the government would be efficient, according to David Lammy. That's the real problem.
Yeah.
It's the inefficiency in processing the applications fast enough. Not that we have so goddamn many that the system has collapsed because we are unable to control our own borders.
Yeah, and of course, when the message gets out that you'll be waited on by, I don't know, hotel staff until your application is actually finalised, you know, that may make more people more motivated to come.
Yeah, 2 to 3 star hotels.
Yeah.
It's not a bad deal.
And a tour around Liverpool Stadium with Domino's Pizza as well at one point.
Yeah, that did take place as well.
Yeah.
But also, just that he treats the men like robots, like they're animals. It's not their fault that they, well, decide to break the law and break into a country. I mean, it just so happens that the country they broke into is staffed by idiots, apparently, and we will put them up in hotels. But no, they're really, they couldn't possibly be piss takers, which, well, apparently, what was it, 70% of them literally are. Never mind the other ones who have to go for another interview. But also just the purpose there, again, from David, which is supporting open borders. I mean, what else is he arguing here? I mean, he's arguing that the turnover isn't fast enough. We need to be turning over tens of thousands a year, not...
Well, he's just outright refusing to address the problem.
Yeah. There's some silly argument they have, but Elizabeth isn't having any of these delay tactics, which is to keep the situation going until, well, there's no one left. And we'll enjoy how Elizabeth took his argumentation.
Sorry?
How long do we stand for this?
What do you mean, how long do we stand for it?
We can't keep doing it.
How long do we...
We're paying out all these they're on the dole and they're in these camps.
Yeah, but that's...
And in the hotel.
I've told you, that's because the Home Office is useless. Hopeless. I mean, at the moment, we've got passport queues because they're so hopeless, let alone processing. They're just useless. Blame Priti Patel, Elizabeth. Don't blame the poor old asylum seeker.
Good luck to Priti Patel. She stayed in for years.
Look at his face.
Good luck to her. But can't she done something, bucked her ideas up and got rid of them? That's all I'm going to say. Goodbye.
I'm sorry, but I really did enjoy David Lammy's face there. Yeah. It was just like, oh, crap, I've lost. Yeah, you have. Because yeah. Your position is ridiculous. If we go to the next link here, we can also see there's some other stuff on LBC. This one, Ian Dale, I don't mind so much. He's quite reasonable. I see.
He can be.
So him here, he decided to look into the Rwandan situation some more. And he was repelled by this. I don't really know why. He called up someone apparently from the UN who instructed him that, well, the refugees who go to Rwanda, if they're found to be legitimate asylum seekers, they genuinely deserve somewhere, they're not just piss takers, they are going to stay in Rwanda. As in, like, the Rwandan government is going to set up ways for them to become software engineers, as we saw earlier. And he was disgusted by this, and I was like, why? Because, well, this is what we do with refugees, like, all over the world.
But surely that's good for the refugees, and it's good for Rwanda.
Refugees, so welcome. If we go to the next one, we can actually see what the UN themselves, I mean, this is just their website on refugees in Rwanda, in which they list that the Rwanda hosts around 60 refugees from around 60 countries, including Afghanistan, Eritrea, Somalia, you know, the kind of people who are turning up in the sea for us. They also Haiti. I mean, it's a bit far away. It's almost
just
like
a little bit.
It's almost like someone also has set up a deal so we can send them over there, because it's fine. It's not Lord of the Flies out there. You know, it's not Machetes at Dawn. And I love that this comes from the nationalist United Nations as well, saying that maybe we should send more refugees to Rwanda. They're going to love it. And if we go to the next one, there's also, this is when they're not just perpetuating fake news, literal fake news here, from the Mirror, the socialist paper in the UK. If we can scroll down, John, they have the headline here. Horrible news. Rwandan genocide orphans to be booted out of home to make way for UK asylum seekers. Could you imagine accusing them of anything more awful? You're going to kick out genocide orphans to make way for the UK asylum. This is horrible.
Yeah.
How could you do this? Well, they know, because they had an interview with Emmanuel Munsia. Go to the next one. Here's Emmanuel, his Twitter page. Hello. I didn't talk to you, ever. Like, you just made this up.
Why?
I don't know. It's just some guy who's just like, I did not talk to you or any UK journalists. Don't mislead your readers. Complete bollocks. I mean, it's just absolute fake news.
Why would you lie about that?
Yeah, well, for clicks. What else? I suppose, obviously. Or also to try and spread, well, more leftism, presumably.
Obviously.
But there you are. There's the situation with the Rwandans and the state of LBC, which is just a mess by the looks of it, because they kept purging everyone who was interesting. And, well, what's going to be left after that?
Well, is Ian Dale literally the most right-wing person there now? He must be.
I mean, I wouldn't describe him as right-wing, but he's willing to give an argument a hearing. That makes him right wing, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose it does. Indeed.
Yeah, so that's the state of LBC, which, it's a bit sad to see it is what it is, but, well, it's inevitable when it's run by leftists and keeps purging everyone who's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's go to the video comments.
So why do these two rounds, stamped with different calibers, work in the same gun? Well, before metallic cartridges, the bullet, chamber, and bore were the same diameter. Then we made casings, and they had to get between the bullet and the chamber. Reducing the diameter of part of the bullet worked, so they went along converting their existing designs, only discovering the major problems with this after investing in tooling. So rather than lose those investments and redesign the whole gun around making the casing bigger, they bit the cost of making new barrels and bullets of a smaller diameter. And rather than redo patent work and confuse people, they kept the .38 caliber in name only, but corrected it with later cartridges. Well, mostly.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
I always do enjoy... who's that old guy who runs a YouTube channel about guns? Oh, like, he's such a meme. Like, there's photos of him on a little bicycle with a Uzi, like, shooting up a bunch of soda cans. Oh, I can't remember the name. Anyway, I'm sure people will know. Someone put in chat. But he does, like, these little series where he shows off. And I love the guns that always can are, like, the in-between guns, where they've got to use different rounds and whatnot, because it's engineering magic at its finest. Anyway, I don't know if anyone can remember his name, but it's going to haunt me now. Go to the next one.
MAIC is part of the Six Sigma quality set. Define a problem, measure it, analyze the data, implement change, and then control it. Problem definition is crucial as it influences measurement and analysis. Errors in each could cause bimodal or multimodal distributions, changes to which can cause unpredictable outcomes. The gender wage gap is a prime example. The main error with progressives is that they cannot properly define what they see as problems, and so their data is always wrong. They fail to predict the outcome of their demands because their model of the world is so divorced from reality.
But it's set up to be divorced from reality, isn't it? Like, definitively speaking.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It works from presuppositions about race and gender that that don't make sense in the real world. And the only way that they can continue to further their ends politically is to obfuscate the reality. Hence the control of speech, hence the control of the institutions, so on.
I have enjoyed going through with Carl the Russo stuff, just listening to him being like, yeah, so this is what this guy actually published. I'm endlessly wondering why on earth anyone brought into it. I mean, in the sense of it's so nonsensical that you are going to end up with nonsense in your end goal.
But Russo is almost a tragedy in a person because he sets out to almost negate the vanity of the modern world only to create probably the most vain, stupid, constrained political philosophy imaginable to the detriment of many for hundreds of years.
Insane.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one. Happy Easter.
It's brilliant. Good form. And to you.
Deus Vult. I mean, I don't know what to say to that. Okay. That's cool, I guess.
I would say God approves, but I'm not a Catholic.
God. I like that people are starting to work together more and more. Always make me laugh. Let's go to the next one.
So I remember Callum saying that he used to play Command & Conquer Generals, and I was wondering if he has ever played the Rise of the Reds mod, which is basically an unofficial sequel taking place 20 years after the original games, where you get to play as the Russians and the EU along with the original factions, and they basically created entirely new tiers of vehicles and everything while adding new stuff to the old factions, and it's bizarre to see a completely fully realized video game just made on a whim. The EU is an interesting faction in that it's based around in-depth defense, where they have like 10 designated defensive structures backed up by a competitively defensive air force and a janky surplus ground equipment due to the fact that their economy sucks so bad.
I have played a little bit. It was a long time ago because it was my brother installed it for me. These days, I've got the one on Origins. If you know how to install the mods on Origins, for the love of Christ, let me know, because I'm struggling with just the base game. It's not as fun.
I've never played it.
But I just I love the EU faction, because there's also this very diverse cast of voice actors for it, because it has to represent all the different cultures, and therefore you've got like some Irishmen, Frenchmen, and stupid accents. And no, it is good fun. Because I even messaged Origins staff about this at one point, because I got that desperate. I was like, look, how do I install these mods? Come on. Like, I know you're a member of staff, but you must know and know this is important. And they waited like a day and then just got back to me and went, don't install the mods. I'm like, thanks. Great. Thanks, EA. Anyway, sorry. I have a bit of a love of Command & Conquer Generals.
I can tell.
Did you ever play any of the Red Alert ones?
Or I didn't.
Nah?
No, I didn't play that many military strategy games, sadly.
Yeah, but there's the Red Alert ones are in a bit of a weird parallel universe where it's all wacky, and I appreciate that. But the Command & Conquer Generals, it's an RTS that's based in modern day, so it's actually based in some reality, so it's good fun. Best faction, though, is that you can play as the Global Liberation Army, who are very Arabic, and they have a unit that's literally just called Terrorist, and he's got a big old turban and a lovely flak jacket made out of TNT, and he just screams, I'll make the sacrifice, and just runs in and just goes, Allah, and it blows up.
Peaceful.
Yeah, but EA published that.
That's amazing.
You can make whole swords of terrorists and send them into the US camps and blow them all up. And I was thinking about this while I was playing it. I was like, you know what, this game came out, must have been at the Iraq, Afghan war period.
Yeah.
Holy crap, this was cutting edge. Yeah, anyway. AK-47.
We have to go and play it now.
Yeah, I love the memes. I can see the chats enjoying it. I don't know. Let's go to the next one. Oh, it's getting published later.
That's amazing. I love it.
That was very good. Much enjoyed. Although, good news, folks, on that front. Salutes in the chat, because the Family Sex Show is cancelled.
Hear, hear.
It's gone. They're not coming back, apparently.
Cheers to that.
Bye-bye.
Go to hell.
Yeah, you know, I always hear these jokes about, like, oh, the right wing's engaging cancel culture. Mm. So, if we have to. Like, if this is the world we live in, fine. Yeah, I'm all right with this one.
If this is the sort of thing that we're cancelling, I'm all for it. I will change my mind overnight.
But it's also just like, okay, the world is what it is. We play within these rules. And frankly, I'm happy to use that weapon against that.
Yep. This is not the paradigm that we created, after all. We have to deal with the hand that we've got.
Let's call it a grave. It's family sex show. It is the future you chose. Let's go to the next one.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines. From NorthJersey.com comes the story of Gregory's Restaurant and Bar in Somerset, New Jersey. Known for its Taco Tuesday and good wings, Gregory's was built in 1908 and was at some point used as a brothel, probably around Prohibition. Its main ghost is that of a man named Uncle Eddie, who used to work in the bar, but he's dead now and apparently continues to work, even in the afterlife.
Hard-working man.
Oh, I was just looking at Little Joan. Sorry, I don't think much of that.
Well, Joan was particularly well-behaved there compared to some other segments.
She was also very excited about the drinking.
Yes.
What happens if you get a dog drunk, actually? I've never done that.
I've never tried it.
I'll Google that later. Because I know there's some footage of some ducks drinking beer in the UK. Mm. Like, I think it's in the 80s or something. Some guy kept bringing a duck to the pub. And the BBC went down and filmed it. And they just gave him like half a pint of bitter, and he would just literally screw it. He seemed to have a good time.
Yeah, well, from what I've heard of dogs, they tend to just get sleepy. But
well, okay. More reasons to buy a duck, I suppose.
Yeah.
Also, I did have a question about Yankees and St. Patrick's Day. What's with the green beer? Like, I've seen that online.
I've never seen green beer in my life.
Yeah, that's not a thing here at all. What does it taste like? Like, I imagine it's just colouring, and therefore you can't really taste much, but just, surely the colour has an effect on you, like, you know, when you colour pasta to have a different flavour, but, yeah, just a question. Go next one.
Happy Easter. So I read something that actually scared me the other day. So according to this one post I read on Facebook, I can't leave this country without proof of vaccination status. So not only was I forced to get vaccinated and forced to stay indoors for a few months, but I can't even leave this f***ing country without some kind of vaccination status to say that I have been vaccinated. I hope this s*** is fake.
Yeah. Means to apply for a travel exemption to leave Australia.
Or buy a private jet.
Well, I mean, it was your fault for being born in a prison colony. I don't know. No, I've got the same situation, because... I was trying to look for places for Carl to go on holiday or something, because he was whining about it. And he won't even do the tests, because he's, you know, he's just not doing that. And there's nowhere. Like, he literally just can't go. I mean, we keep getting invites from people to America to go and do stuff, and I'm just like, yeah, sorry. It's not happening. Because, yeah.
We're never going to go back to normal, are we?
I don't know. I mean, with Donald Trump coming back in, that might change things. Because the vaccine stuff is Biden. Mm-hmm. That was his administration's doing, and it stuck around for no reason. So,
We can only hope. But...
Yeah, have some hope there. But otherwise, apparently the green beer tastes like Shrek's piss.
Oh dear, I won't be trying.
All right, I'll give that a skip. That. Somebody wants no. So on God is Rwandan, Longshanks 1690 says, "That's where Calvin went wrong. He insisted on trying to be a Christian and a member of the Church of England." The two ideologies were bound to come into conflict sooner or later. Yeah, I know, but it's... Like, we all laugh about it. I don't know if people outside the UK don't know. We all laugh at the Church of England being this irreligious place. And it is so true, but at the same time, it's... What are you doing with your life as being an atheist bishop?
It's almost as if we need a second reformation, as in a reformation of the previous reformation. Because this has got to the point where, well, acting on conscience or... We've given far too much importance to the heart of the wrong kind. As in the Reformation was about reaffirming the fact that it's not sufficient enough, as per the Catholic Church had it, to adhere to the Ten Commandments on their own, or at least to claim that you can gain entry to heaven from participating in sacraments, works, etc. It was you have to believe these things in the heart. The Church of England, as I suppose, of a Protestant denomination, was founded on that principle, but the person with the wrong heart seems to have seized control of it somehow, because quite clearly it's so detached from what we understand as the Christian moral universe, that it's almost its polar opposites at this point.
I mean, the strange part there being that the monarch, of course, being the head of it.
Yes.
She does have influence who goes where, and she is genuinely a Christian.
Yeah.
Like, I did it on my video about the monarchy, but there are genuine moments in her life throughout it in which she puts her foot down and says, no, that's not the Christian thing to do. We're not doing it.
Yeah, she's now, what, 96?
Yeah, so you just hope that maybe there'd be more reform there, because that's the only avenue, because from the bottom doesn't seem...
I don't have any hope in Charles, assuming that he doesn't abdicate, of course, to turn things around, but...
Who knows? Mm. Anyway, Longshanks continues, but really, if I had one political wish I granted, it would be for Kelvin to be raised to Archbishop of Canterbury. Me too.
Yes, absolutely.
I can't guarantee anyone else would be able to do good in power, but I'm sure Kelvin would do wonders for the spirituality of the realm if he had the ability to speak with that authority.
Well, he is already doing wonders for the realm, even though he's not in an official position in the church. Just being where he is and doing... in being him, he's doing a lot of good for the Christian faith.
Good boy.
Yes.
Good boy. Free Will 2112, social justice is the religion of the Church of England now. The C of E will probably not last another generation, especially if they're going to accuse people like Captain Tom of being white nationalists.
that's honestly one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard.
It is a left-wing, white-hating social justice Frankenstein monster posing as a Christian organization.
That's literally what it is, yeah.
Perfectly put.
Yeah.
Kenneth Perrin says, MPs being more Christian than the archbishops, what has the world come to?
Yeah. Quite right.
Kevin Fox, this would be the same God who tells the church ministers to convince illegal immigrants to convert to Christianity so they can reapply for asylum based on the fact that they are now haram in their home country.
Yeah. See, I wonder if they have a conscience about that.
Of course not. Atheists. No. I mean, in the respect to God. I mean, I don't think any of them give a crap about religion in the slightest. I think it's a career thing at this point.
No, it is. It's
weird. Paul Newman-Burr says most churches have been colonized and taken over by wokeness. Well, demonstrably true.
Yeah, not just the churches, it's literally everything.
we're going to be reduced to the Westboro Baptist Church being the last church.
that's where it's going.
Harry Geeman says the Rwandans will regret this move. This is the type of subversion we should have been under for 25 years. Maybe, but... they asked for it, and I'm not about to unoblige trying to fix Britain, even if the Rwandans are desperate for these engineers and doctors. Let them have them. Alex Ogle, if anything should be clear to Christians, it is that Jesus was not a refugee. His family was returning to their place of origin for the Roman census. That is the very opposite of what refugees do. That's a good point. Go home. The mere meagerness of the stable in which he was born was a product of the massive public upheaval, putting accommodation strain on areas that were not used to it. Christians could make that parallel, but not Jesus being a refugee. It's a very good point. The inns are all out of room. We can't put the homeless people on the streets in the holiday. Sorry. The inn down there, because, well, it's all full of sea people.
Yeah.
Well, then it's on... Mr. Spaniard says, when an atheist since birth, such as me, is more concerned about the preservation of Christianity than the clergy, you know the world has gone entirely mad. It certainly has.
Absolutely.
Should we move on to Zelensky?
Yes, Zelensky's nuclear threats. So, Lord Nemovar says, I've been intensely angry at Volodymyr Zelensky for a while now. He seems hell-bent on dragging the West by the hair into this war with Russia. While he didn't start the war, he wants to drag us further and further in. Damn the consequences. It looks as though he actually wants to cause an international incident and a world war. Zelensky, I do not want to die in a nuclear war, so shut up. I could not put it better myself, to be honest. That's exactly how I see it at this point. I think he actually stooped to a new low by saying this, irresponsibly, when Russia themselves have not uttered any such thing. And to our knowledge, our intelligence services, they only release some information to the public, of course. We have no reason to believe at this point that they're considering this option. Zelensky has just made them probably statistically more likely to do that, because he is, of course, representing the NATO bastion at this point, because he is, after all, leading the force that is in the war.
I mean, I agree that he's definitely the representative of NATO in Ukraine, because we're backing Ukraine, right?
Yes, well, and they are NATO-trained forces.
Yeah, many of them.
Yes. Anyway, student of history says, fully respect to the Ukrainians. I understand that this is their great patriotic war, but Jesus, stop trying to drag us into this. Again, I'm sympathetic, hugely sympathetic to Ukraine. Genuine. I know I shouldn't have to state that, but I think it often, the NATO critical position, I think, gets misrepresented a lot. Like, we're not, it doesn't immediately mean that you're shilling for Putin. It means that you very much see this as a geopolitical diplomatic mess that some people 8 years ago claimed would happen if we were going to continue getting involved in what was going on in Donbass since 2014.
I'm trying to remember the guy I found. He's now the head of the CIA. I believe he was the ambassador to Moscow in 2008. Mm. And in 2008, he wrote a piece which was then leaked by WikiLeaks. It's classified, but it's public now. I mean, he literally just states, like, Ukraine's a red line. If we try and get them in the West, then Russia will invade. Mm. Okay, now he's the head of the CIA. Like, he knew. Like, he definitely knew. Like, he's advising the president every other day.
Yeah.
Like, we must have known this was a risk. But, yeah, too late for that.
You can be relatively certain that there are members in the Pentagon who are absolutely delighted at the way this has played out so far, because they have weakened Russia enormously without actually committing to anything, really, other than just arming someone who will fight the battle for them. That is where I feel sorry for Ukraine the most, because that there are outside incentives for them to fight this war. And as Zelensky sees it at the moment, we're egging them on by not giving them any actual help.
It's complex. Like, yeah. It's not
anyway, of course, $800 million worth of aid is a lot. But anyway, Salit Midon says, it feels that Zelensky's upping the rhetoric and trying to escalate the war to stay relevant with his allies in the West. We're tired of the war already, fed up of our own issues with the cost of living, and the media are moving the NPCs onto hating Elon and Rwanda instead of Russia bad. In the same way Russia did for COVID, Elon Musk has done for Ukraine's time in the spotlight. Yeah. Anything to contest about that?
No, I'm laughing because the idea that we're all meant to hate Rwanda, I'm just sat here like, Rwanda forever. Like, I'm sorry, but who would have predicted this 6 months ago? Like, we were laughing about the idea because the proposal seemed like a joke Priti Patel made, and then it's become real. I'm like, okay, this is fun.
Callum Dayton says, a cornered animal is more dangerous. That's in quotes. Any hunter, tactician, or strategist knows this, but these days... Well, a tactical nuke is not the same scale of destruction or fallouts than a strategic nuke. Maybe we could get away with one, perhaps. Not me saying this or suggesting, but some moron. And in terms of every civvy in Ukraine having a gun, that would be more accurate for Switzerland, given what I know of it compared to Ukraine. In Switzerland, you either do national service or pay higher taxes. But once you've done your service, you get a rifle, the one you served with, and 500 rounds of ammunition to put under your bed. I honestly... On the nuke question, I don't think there is such a thing as a tactical nuke. I think dropping one anywhere, whether that be... I think if Russia were to drop one on Ukraine, even a small one, I genuinely think that would cause NATO to unite around the idea of actual intervention, and then Russia would be done. If Russia, however, were to launch a tactical nuke, I don't know, let's just say on the US in somewhere that's remote with not many people in it, I genuinely think the Pentagon would be pissed off enough about that.
Oh, well, that would be just the end of the world. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm thinking, what could he reasonably try and get away with? And this is the, you know, about the doctrine and Constantine's talked about this.
Yeah.
Is, well, you set off, if you're losing and you're like, right, I need to win, I need to show the West that, look, this is mine, stop.
Yeah.
This is over.
Yeah, and I'm not scared to use them.
Yeah, you either drop like a small nuke on a you know, a major highway, or you blow up Lviv or something like that, and then that's a statement. It's going to isolate you internationally for years.
Yeah,
but it's a statement of like, look, I'm losing, but I'm going to win this.
Yeah,
and you guys are going to back down now.
Yeah,
that's a potential worry.
Yeah, and I'm sure they've entertained the idea somewhere in the ranks, but that wouldn't be a tactical nuke, because I genuinely think that would be enough to. For some to justify proper intervention. That's just my opinion.
See what happens, I guess.
Yeah, it's just the symbolic significance attached to using nukes at all, I think, given of course the fear of it happening in the Cold War.
You know about Douglas MacArthur's plan in Korea?
No.
So North Koreans invaded, US intervened, pushed them all the way back to the border, and then the Chinese joined in, and Douglas was like, okay, we can't hold the Chinese. So what if we just nuke them? Like, he wanted to drop nukes all along the Korean-Chinese border so that no one could move through. And unfortunately, Truman said no.
Oh.
It would have been fun.
It would have been interesting. Yeah.
Just this dead zone in the north where nothing lives. Sorry.
No, I'll have to look that up. That actually sounds really interesting. I'm completely oblivious to that.
He got dismissed from his position entirely for suggesting that.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is a critique, apparently. Paul Neubauer says, Zelensky is simply reminding everyone of Putin's policy and threats. The question is, why hasn't the West reminded Putin that the West has nuclear weapons and a willing list to use them if Russia does? Pushing Russia into a corner, Russia's existence is not in question here. They have an expeditionary force in Ukraine and they need to leave. NATO should have put boots on the ground in eastern Ukraine 8 weeks ago. No, absolutely not.
I find interesting your point that we don't remind the Russians that we have nukes, but quite frankly I think we don't do that because we don't need to. We don't feel the need to constantly buy rate they do. In regards to the nuclear question though, like if they nuked Ukraine, we're not going to start World War III with nuclear weapons of our own. If they nuke NATO, then we're going to do it.
What you would see first is troops crossing the border from Poland into.
Well, that's if we decide to engage, right?
Yes, if we decide to engage, yeah.
It's an assumption there.
Yeah, we'll go on to the LBC stuff because we're running out of time.
But I do agree that they are the invaders. That's a statement of. Obvious.
Yeah.
On LBC, so Callum Dayton says, I'm reminded of TIC's history stuff when it comes to GPD. The Soviet Union had a record high of GDP, as did Mao's China, but the people and children starved to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I think of GDP, I think of starving people. How very liberal, Miss LBC host. Why don't you host half a dozen Muslim immigrants then? And don't worry, you will have to teach the foreigners how to use the toilet and flush.
GDP.
Okay, Callum.
GDP means nothing unless you are, of course, a Keynesian or an enthusiast of a planned economy.
It's just mad as well. You hear it so much from S-libs as well in the UK. They're like, oh, but the migration ups the GDP.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the GDP per person is nothing. Like, it's stable. We're not getting richer. It's been since 2008, we're still poorer than we were in 2008. I'm sorry, but that's a long time to just have no growth.
Yeah, it's nearly 20 years.
Ridiculous. Christian Anderson says, so she wants to import a cheap serf class who can deliver her food, clean her house, take care of her elderly relatives, etc. It's awfully, awfully close to slave trading.
It is, isn't it?
And if it was good for the GDP per capita, that would mean UK was draining the third world of its human capital.
Yeah, it's funny how they don't care about that, isn't it?
Those crafty persons who might bring their countries up from poverty. That is colonialism. Yeah, there's also that criticism.
Yeah.
Jonah Lord says, if you consider homosexuality a crime, I don't consider your nation civilized. Simple as. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. There's very many a rhetoric, or sorry, very many a bar you can judge a civilized nation. I think Afghanistan's got the lowest one of, is being a nonce illegal? Yes, for homosexuals, say the Taliban.
Just for homosexuals.
Great. That's an uncivilized asshole.
Yeah, I don't have anything to disagree with that.
It's racist to call Afghanistan civilized. Oh, really? Yeah, why don't you move there and cover up your face, your highness? Lord Nerevar, LBC, losing Britain's confidence. Certainly is. Student of history, take 500 refugees, drop them off in their neighborhoods and tell them, nope, you're not allowed to move you must tell them to be tolerant. Not gonna work.
No.
Benjamin Charles, genocide orphans. The Rwandan genocide happened in the 1990s. The youngest of them is 20 plus years old. Yes, this was a point made. I couldn't get into it, but the hotel owners also were like, this is bollocks, for the obvious point that we stopped having anyone in this hotel 5 years ago. It's kind of been abandoned since, because it used to be used for that, and then, we didn't need it anymore, because they're all grown up. Alex Bradbury says, she moved to Rwanda if she thinks this island is racist. I hear they are very inclusive and welcoming to all migrants.
Well, so they claimed in that video, that was hilarious.
I love it. Yeah. I love, you can tell, Priti Patel or one of her staffers was just like, please say this on camera. There's no way they talk like that to each other. Freewell 212 says, FU LBC, we are not a silly little country. We have nukes and are the sixth largest economy in the world. What does this idiot talking head know about anything? If you don't like it here, go somewhere else. North Korea, perhaps. They also have nukes, but they are not anywhere near as well. They are far more silly.
and far less woke than we are.
Yeah.
Funny enough, more communist.
They've got race
woke.
Socialism, though.
Yeah.
So they. She'll like it over there.
It is amazing how socialists like to flirt with outright racism, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in North Korea, they don't flirt with it.
No.
It's the law.
Mm. In that case, yeah.
Honorable mention, so Charlie the Beagle, says, regarding the state of LBC and Dr. Shola, is there any chance someone could tell her I'm still waiting for her brother, the prince, to send me money to my bank account? He wrote me an email, and he promised he would. I sent him another email, maybe another check, maybe it's just not back. Don't do that.
Brilliant.
I see John's loaded up something here. Britons are turned away as mini breaks are cancelled at hotels for migrants. Sue Reed examines how the government spends £5 million a day to block booking rooms. Yeah, it's a lot of money we're wasting on crap. As you can see, apparently 4-star hotels now.
So we've upgraded.
1-star ran out of them, 2-star ran out of them, 3-star, nope. We're up to 4 stars now. So if you're in Calais and looking for a holiday, even if you're French, who cares? Say you're Iranian, apparently.
Give it a year, they'll be in the Marriott.
Yes. Did you see the joke? It was like, we could host them in the Marriott with the amount of money this scheme's costing us. Like, we really are. We really are taking the piss. Anyway, sorry. We're out of time. If you'd like more from us, go over to lowersears.com. Of course, please do subscribe to get access to premium content and help fund the show. To those of you who are, thank you incredibly. We wouldn't be here without you. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.